Welcome back, everybody. This is Oscar Talk with yours truly, Chris Tapley of InContention.com, and Ann Thompson of Thompson on Hollywood. And what a difference the last 10 days or so has made, because we haven't done this since the day of the nominations. We took the rest of the week off.
Well, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, I guess I was right.
You love to say it. Don't lie. Well, look.
No, I said this on a panel the other day. There was a bloggers panel, which turned out to be an Oscar bloggers panel in Santa Barbara. And
we will get to in a moment, by the way.
No, I don't want to get into all the details of it. But the point I was making there was just that my training is such that there was a time when I worked at Premiere, which was a monthly magazine, when I had to guess and figure out and scope out the Oscars, you know, months in advance. I mean, I had to do it before all the critics voted and before all the guilds voted and before. I think what happens is that everybody gets very caught up in the day-to-day tea leaf reading, you know, and sure. Of course we all have to pay attention to that. We would be foolish not to. It's part of what we're doing. But if you really, really do scope out what are the Academy voters going to like and do.
And what do they like, frankly, because we've been reporting this week in and week out that this is the movie that brings them to their feet, The King's Speech.
Correct. And now that we know that all the guilds have swept SAG, PGA, DGA, and we'll find out, you know,
WGA won't happen, but
because
that,
it's not eligible. But you know, historically, if all three go with a given film, that film wins, and there's no reason to think otherwise.
Right. And someone made the comment recently that there has been no reason to think otherwise regarding the idea that The Social Network was going to win. You know, my take on it was, and you know, this is kind of making me sound douchey and whatever, but my take on it was I ignored my reporting. I ignored what I knew and thought that they were just going to not want to feel irrelevant and not want to miss the boat and would chalk up The Social Network. So my gut instinct wasn't that The King's Speech was going to win. My gut instinct was that The King's Speech was going to ultimately lose because of that, which I shouldn't have followed that instinct. I should have, you know, like you did, stick with what you know. And the fact was, as we've stated consistently, critics don't vote for Oscars, and the Academy was really responding to this, what you say, a soft lob down the middle. And one of our commenters, actually, one of my readers, had a question, and I'm actually going to throw it out there now. Let's see. Regarding that soft lob down the middle, I've mentioned elsewhere that this is the first year in a while where a traditional prestige film has actually lived up to the hype. I'm talking about The King's Speech, which I really like, Dreamgirls, Atonement, Benjamin Button, Australia, Nine, Invictus. They all had issues which impeded Best Picture success. How much of The King's Speech's possible win this year can be attributed solely to the fact that a soft lob down the middle actually hit it out of the park for the first time in years? And that's critically and box office speaking. And that has a lot to do with it. This is a movie that actually, it is an Academy, it is Oscar bait that actually worked, as opposed to some of these other films that this questioner, JJ1, is bringing up.
I think it's a very good question, very well put. But I would also argue, I take a little bit of umbrage at the way so many people want to dismiss The King's Speech as just another prestige costume period English drama, as if there's something wrong with it, and something old-fashioned and something square. And I would add that some of the advertising materials support that, you know, impression. But really, Tom Hooper and David Seidler and the actors really delivered. Mm-hmm. This is not, this isn't just a soft lob. This is a, you're right. I like that image. This is a great home run, and we can't argue with it.
And, you know, I'm with you on that. And it's interesting because I did an interview yesterday with Susan Wozena of USA Today. I've been turning these down this year just because it's been too much.
It takes time.
It takes time, and it's too much noise, and what can you add? But I really liked her take on it, so I participated. And
I like her too.
You know, she was saying, look, these two films are actually quite similar. It's about socially awkward individuals utilizing new technologies to communicate, and they're both told in classic storytelling strokes, I think. I really think to put The Social Network oh so high and to put The King's Speech oh so low is ignorant, in a sense. I mean, this is a well-directed film, The King's Speech. I think that Hooper has been getting slagged for no reason. When you hear the guy talk about his process, Tim Appello did a dinner... And is that how you say Tim's name, by the way?
Tim Appello.
Appello. Did an interview with Tom recently, and it's a really good interview, and it really lets you into his process of directing this film. And you know, if you don't like that it's gonna beat your favorite film, fine, but don't then turn it around and start to make things up about the movie.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think that the way he directed it was intelligent and innovative, and some people could object to the wide angle lens and so forth, and but there's a he articulates an aesthetic behind that.
Yeah.
And he was trying very hard to take that movie away from standard issue period, and I think that you know, the DGA recognized Tom Hooper for a reason. That said, that doesn't mean he's going to win director on Oscar night, and I am sticking with Fincher for various reasons, which have to do with A, I think the Academy does take when they fill out that ballot, they actually do look at one from column A, one from there. They spread it around. They spread the love around, and I think that they're going to recognize Fincher's career here more than Hooper. It could go to Hooper. I wouldn't be surprised, but he's not really a member of the Academy Club the way Fincher needs to be, is long overdue to be.
To see that happen. I think Fincher deserves it more. I do think, you know, some people try to draw the parallel to Rob Marshall losing for Chicago, but David Fincher is not Roman Polanski. You know, Roman Polanski doesn't have an Oscar in 2002. It's time to give it to him, on top of which, think of the subject matter of that movie, The Pianist. They don't really compute. I think Hooper's going to win it. I legitimately think this is going to be a big sweeper. I don't think it'll take supporting actor. Obviously, I think Bale is secure.
No, I don't think so. Or actress. And I don't think it's a sweeper. I actually don't think it is. I think that there's a possibility that True Grit, which got 10 nominations, could, you know, they're going to say, we love True Grit, we're not giving it to the Coens, we're not giving it to Jeff Bridges because they've won already, and we're not giving it they're going to give it to Roger Deakins.
They could give it to King's Speech. I think you're also arguing against your own logic here, because it's not one hive mind thinking about these things.
I think there are years when you see a sweep, and there are years when you see people according due across a number of different films, and it's sometimes you have to are we recognizing that there's an enormous sweep potential for King's Speech, or are they going to spread the love around a little bit? And I could see True Grit, but by the way, you know, not only getting cinematography, but maybe Haley Steinfeld. That category is wide open.
I'm getting a Gangs of New York vibe on True Grit, to be honest. It got a lot of nominations, but there is an uphill battle that film has faced from the beginning that it's not really winning, and that is the idea of it being a remake of a John Wayne movie. I mean, there is still that pushback prevalent in what I'm hearing. And I think it's possible it could win nothing. I think it's possible. I think its best shot is Deakins, and hopefully the man finally wins an Oscar.
Well, that's the thing. Again, it's a career prize. That doesn't help Haley Steinfeld, but
right. For
Deakins, it's a career prize.
So,
but there are a lot of people who do feel strongly that Steinfeld should have been a Best Actress contender,
right. Even
if I don't.
Right.
so maybe she gets something. It has happened many times before.
Look, you know, I'm still thinking that she can pull it out, but that supporting actress category is going to be the one to watch, I think.
It'll be a surprise either. I mean, Melissa Leo is considered the front runner in that category, but I still maintain that Amy Adams could steal some votes from her. And I don't actually see, your sweep theory aside, I don't see Helena Bonham Carter getting in there.
I don't actually either.
No one is talking about her.
I mean, she's a bit of an outsider in a way, too. So,
well deserved. I mean, she's been around a long time, and she's done a lot of good work this year, including Alice in Wonderland. But whatever.
I'm thinking. That that's a good way to sum it all up. I'm thinking best picture, best director, best actor, obviously, best screenplay. I really think art direction and costumes will go to King's Speech. I think it's possible cinematography goes to it. I think it gets score.
I agree with you there. You and I are not in the majority on that one.
Yeah,
I noticed.
Yeah,
we agree on that one. Well, we have to vote in these various polls around Gold Derby and so forth. Yeah,
which I think, I don't know if any of them really has my picks can change from day to day. So definitely always check my site for what I'm actually predicting.
I think I have Alice in Wonderland and Inception winning some things.
Mm-hmm.
I think the technicals could go in that direction.
Yeah.
Certainly visual effects and obviously, but I think art direction could go any number of ways.
Yeah. I'm kind of, before the DGA, I kind of said, I think DGA and SAG are both going to go with King's Speech, and I think it's just going to be the beginnings of a sweep. So I'm probably, unless something drastic happens where I hear some things or whatever, I think I'm just going to stick with that idea of a sweep, lacking supporting actress and obviously best sound mixing. I don't think it's going
to
win.
And obviously supporting actor does not go to Rush. It goes to Christian Bale.
Yeah. Which that would be a bigger story if somehow Bale lost the Oscar this year, because it's probably the best performance nominated outside of Javier Bardem.
And they're going to give something to The Fighter. I mean, this is what I'm trying to say. They want The Fighter to win something. I'm arguing that they want each of these films to win something.
I actually think the best picture race is not between the King's Speech and The Social Network. I actually think it's between The King's Speech and The Fighter at this point.
I'm not feeling a lot of serious love for The Fighter.
I am.
I'm feeling people like it, but I'm not hearing Fighter.
This is the thing. A lot of those number two votes are The Fighter, and that helps out with this process. So that's my reasoning.
Okay.
But let's talk about we kind of were touching on it there. Let's talk about potential for upsets. It was actually the question that David Poland asked us of the Gurus of Gold this week.
How did you answer that question?
Well, my three were Haley Steinfeld.
Right. Me too.
Annette Bening.
Me too.
And Michael Arndt.
I do not see that happening. And part of it is because of the writers panel that I moderated in Santa Barbara. It was just so clear that Seidler had the warmth and regard of that audience, and it's his story
Michael,
how he made that happen. Oh, you're talking about Arndt and Adapted.
Yeah.
You think Arndt and Adapted over Sorkin?
I think it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't even think I'll ever go as far as to predict it. I'm just saying I think that's a possibility. Because I wonder how, it's become a season of upsets to an extent, and I wonder how deep that actually might go. Now, the thing is, with the Academy, the extent of what a screenplay is to a lot of these people is dialogue, and that's what The Social Network has in spades.
I think that the Toy Story 3 will win animated feature, even if it didn't win the visual effects prize the other night.
That doesn't matter.
Dragon, it doesn't matter. Yeah. And even though the Annies that are coming on Sunday,
that'll be a How to Train Your Dragon sweep. Yeah.
Did not participate. They did not even submit themselves because they object to the way that the Annies are voted. So
right.
It's going to look like How to Train Your Dragon is gaining momentum, but it really isn't. It will be Toy Story 3. So, but judging from my, pick one from column A and one from column B theory, Toy Story 3 will win Best Animated Film and possibly Best Song or something. And then you have Social Network, which really is very popular, has to win something. It has to win a adapted screenplay. It just has to.
Nothing has to happen.
I will go all in.
It's a fair bet. I mean, it's a bet that maybe I would make. I'm just floating the idea that if they're going to vote with their heart in Best Picture, it's quite possible they'd vote with their heart in the screenplay races. And the movie has story in the title.
That's true, I know. But Arndt has already won.
That actually is an asset. He's not some outsider suddenly making his way through the award season.
people truly admire him, and people truly admire the craft of that screenplay, including me. Of all the interviews I did this season, the one where I sat down with Arndt and went over the intricacies and the difficulties and the challenges of how that screenplay got crafted, mm-hmm. of all the degree of difficulty, I would say that was the highest. Mm-hmm. I would give him super points. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's going to win animation, and therefore I think Sorkin gets and Social Network gets a needed win. It's not going to go away empty-handed.
I'm on the record. What are some other upset possibilities? What were your answers?
Those are the ones.
Benning and Steinfeld.
I think the other ones are pretty clear. I don't see any other upsets, actually, given, I mean, some of those categories are relatively open in the technical side. Mm-hmm. They could go a number of ways. There's not an obvious leader.
What is your take on documentary? Are you sticking with Inside Job?
I am.
Yeah.
Foreign film, you can't. I mean, no one can ever really guess. It
sure
is a
can.
Guessing job.
Sure you
it,
can.
It, there are so many vagaries there. It favors the movie that has been seen the less has more of an advantage than the movie that's been seen the most, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. because you have to sign in and everybody has to see all five in order to vote.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it gives the advantage to the underdog.
Yeah. I think you're going with Beautiful on that, aren't you?
For the moment, mainly because I will honestly admit this, I haven't seen them all yet. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's
I haven't seen On Cindy.
I've seen Dogtooth, and that's not going to win.
Did you see On Cindy in Sundance?
No, I still haven't caught up with it. I have screenings of both that and the Suzanne Beer in A Better World, and I have a screener of Or La Loi, so I'll see them all now.
Okay.
And I have my shorts. I've got DVDs of the animated and live action shorts. So I'm looking forward to seeing those.
Mm-hmm.
And they're
great. There's a lot of good ones with the live action anyway. Animation was a little thin, but the documentaries are just as good as the feature field. I'll be interested to hear what you think about those.
I mean, of the docs, I'm basically suggesting that the Pixar Night and Day and Night will win, but I haven't seen the others, so I really have to check them out.
Well, there's a film called, and you'll see it, Madagascar: A Journey Diary. Is very fascinating animation. I think that could win, just like what was that French film that won a few years ago? That just the animation was impeccable.
Oh, the one where they were diving through the water.
Yeah,
I loved that one.
That was so good.
Yeah,
I can't remember
agree.
The name. Anyway,
all right.
So one of those shorts, the Gruffalo, played in Santa Barbara this weekend. So let's talk about Santa Barbara. I was
what
there
was
for
your
5 days.
Experience?
Well, I was there for 5 days. I saw the Nolan tribute, the Jeffrey Rush tribute, the James Franco tribute, the Annette Bening tribute, and did a couple of panels. Your panel was great. Madeline Hammond's women's panel was really good, too. Unfortunately, undercovered. But that was a great panel also. It's a good time.
I think I went walking on the beach.
Yeah, well, you had just worked pretty hard. So
I went straight from Sundance to, it was rough.
It was a good time. It actually was less of a relaxing time than I anticipated it being.
I was working pretty hard in Santa Barbara,
mm-hmm.
I have to say.
Mm-hmm.
The Annette Bening tribute, I was disappointed by, frankly. I felt that she's actually probably a fairly tough interview that required real massaging,
mm-hmm.
And I think she was fine. She was perfectly dignified and poised and articulate, but I don't feel like it wasn't like Sandra Bullock. Sandra Bullock was awesome last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
she really delivered in a way that I it makes me wonder about Annette Bening having a shot at winning, because I don't think she's not a warm, effusive campaigner. Let's just put it that way.
Right. Right. Exactly. I liked that tribute. I really liked the reel that Roger Durling put together, the festival's
he's
director.
At those. I think he's very good at those.
Wonderful reel. And he clearly had a lot of passion for her and was a good choice, I thought, to moderate. My favorite panel was probably the James Franco panel, which was an
he
hour
was
late.
Awesome. Yeah.
He was an hour late because of Oscar rehearsal, and he just nailed it. I mean, he thought he was going to show up, accept an award from Seth Rogen, and walk off, but he didn't. So he didn't know it was going to be this big 2-hour thing, and probably because of that, it made the interview better, because he was asking these questions from Leonard Maltin as if it was the first time he had heard
and
them.
And he was tired. He was extremely tired. And I think that in a funny kind of way, he had no inhibitions or barriers. You know, he was just answering. He was just trying to answer the questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And he was so engaging. And it was a reminder that everybody starts somewhere. In mm-hmm. other words, he dumped UCLA because they weren't going to let him into the program, you know, the theater program right away. Mm-hmm. He slept on somebody's couch. He worked at McDonald's. You know, he went and did James Dean when everybody told him not to. And yeah. I just loved him.
Yeah, he was great. He was great.
And I've heard the same story that I've heard before from him, but this time, you know, I got some more nuances of it, where he really had a career crisis, possibly on Spider-Man, but basically Seth Rogen was part of the agency of helping him to, and Judd Apatow, helping him to remember to have fun and to go out and try to keep his life busy with other things, including getting educated. That's his solution.
Yeah.
Not being narcissistically over-involved in every single aspect of his craft. And I think a lot of actors would do well to look at Franco as a model for how to get away from that kind mm-hmm. of neurosis that so many of them get caught up in.
That's a great point. Yeah, he said to Rogan, you know, you were there at the beginning of my career, and you were there when I thought I didn't want to do it anymore. And it was a really touching moment. I think Franco's becoming quickly one of my favorite guys in the business, to be honest.
Well, he's also very popular in the world at large. I mean, I think this kind of, you know, perhaps you could call it overexposure, but he draws people's attention organically, really. And I think that people are loving it.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about your bloggers panel at all?
Okay. Well, the writers panel indicated, you know, how much support there really is for Seidler and Sorkin, but the bloggers panel,
Let me set this up real quick. Scott Feinberg, and I think Sasha Stone had this idea, since a lot of us were going to be there to do a bloggers panel. I was, unfortunately, I'd already agreed to do a podcast for another outlet, so I couldn't do it, but it was...
Fortunately for you.
Well, it was you, Scott, Sasha, Pete Hammond, Steve Pond, and Jeffrey Wells. And the videos are out there. It became, I thought, unfortunately, all about King's Speech and Social Network, and not really the point that I think they wanted it to be. Yeah.
So, you know, honestly, Peter Rayner, I love him dearly. He's a good film critic. He's a good writer. But he was more... Somebody made the point that he introduced himself better than he introduced everyone on the panel. And later on, you know, Scott Feinberg actually did a little introduction of everyone on the panel. And I felt that I had hoped it would be more about the new journalism and the new methods of covering the industry, as mm-hmm. opposed to getting caught up in the finite, you know, the we find perhaps the minute details of the Oscar race fascinating. And people mm-hmm. who listen to this podcast perhaps are interested. But in general, I would say the audience out there was like, what are they talking about?
Yeah, I wondered about that. It was a little bit inside baseball for a bit. But did you know?
You know what I learned from it? I learned that what I probably already knew, but that Sasha Stone and Jeff Wells are particularly are examples of a kind of personality, you know, as journalism, and that it's all about their authentic voice. It's all about what they think and what they feel and what they share and what they live is all on the blog, and it's constant. It's 24/7. It's unfiltered. It's just a stream. And mm-hmm. if you know, if anyone follows Sasha Stone's tweets, you know it's a stream.
Yeah.
And it's very engaging, and a lot of people are caught up in it and enjoy it, and they're both very successful. Now I follow them both and respect them both, but I don't consider them to be necessarily doing what I would consider good journalism.
Right.
And that's a fair comment that they might accept. Steve Pond and Pete Hammond are much more doing what we would consider columns or reported and written pieces and more objective journalism, and they're edited and they're paid to write for their sites, and it's the old model, really.
Right.
Even if it's in blog form.
Pete doesn't even write his own headlines, as he mentioned.
No, he doesn't. So you know, you and I are in the middle, really, as people who are trained as journalists who are making a living blogging full time, and yet we have a certain professional standard that we try to uphold, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting to note the backgrounds. I mean, Jeff comes from journalism.
He was always a maverick, and true. He was always getting in trouble, as Nikki Fink did.
Right.
When she was trying to do journalism.
Right.
She likes to consider herself the ultimate journalist and high-minded and proud, but she was always coming up against authority, and blogging was made for her.
Yeah. Well, they might have done maybe it got bogged down in the King's Speech social network thing, probably largely because the focus of these guys is Oscar blogging, and if it was going to be about the new journalism, maybe they would have needed to filter in some other voices that aren't necessarily focused on the award season.
I agree. That's true.
But, you know,
I don't do Oscar blogging full time. I do it as part of what
right.
I do every day.
And, exactly.
And neither does Jeff Wells, by the way. He and I are more similar in that way.
Mm-hmm. For a guy like me who's, neck deep in this stuff every day, it was interesting for sure. So,
well, what did you get from it?
I got a lot of personality out of the panel. you know, a lot of the talking points I've obviously heard. So I wouldn't necessarily say I got anything from it just because I'm in it every day. It was just interesting to hear the voices rather than reading the words. And then, you know, and that's just a given when it comes to passionate blogging. When you hear someone speak, which is probably, you know, a lot of people maybe get this out of our podcast about these things, it can be a little more soothing, I guess, in a way. You know, you made a comment to me, we saw each other in the street, that you, and hopefully you don't mind me saying this, that you're aware that sometimes tweeting and such can come across a bit, what was the word you used? Kind of more direct than you mean it, and what have you. And
yeah, I mean, Sasha Stone and I had engaged in a tweet exchange, and I realized that I had tweaked her, if you like, more mm-hmm. than I intended.
You've tweaked me before too, though.
So yeah, yeah. I don't think you know, sometimes your intention in a text form is not what you would be able to nuance in person, mm-hmm. and everyone's aware of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to. You know, sometimes I'm arguing a case, and I come across strong. You know?
Well, it's my whole thing is always just trying to make sure I'm as clear as possible about what I think, and make sure that's as divorced as possible from what I feel.
In a text form.
Right.
Well, tweeting
just in general, really.
Yeah.
In general, really, is what I mean when it comes to this work, I guess.
Well, that's the question of separating opinion from reporting, you know, making it clear. You know, some people would argue that they would like to hear more of my personality in the blog, and I've heard that a lot. And when I do it, people enjoy it. But it at the same time, I do think that there's something you can have a little more authority or respect or calm reason,
mm-hmm.
Then, you know, just throwing out your opinion all the time.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
It does. I know what you mean. But, I thought it was a good panel.
And one person did say to me, you know, everybody gets very noisy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Especially this time of year when it comes to these outlets. All right, let's take a couple of reader questions. We'll start with this first one because everybody was dying to hear an answer to this one. And it's from Robert Hamer. He asks, if Scott Rudin hires both you and Anne to help refocus the Social Network's Oscar campaign, what would you do to help it pull off a victory at this point in the race? Take it away.
Well, I don't think I would be so focused on trying to make nice with Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, the way that Sorkin has been, sort of sucking up to him in all of his awards speeches, acceptance speeches, is a sort of obvious talking point to me. You know, they're trying to ameliorate whatever, criticism there is that they were too tough on Zuckerberg. I think the fact that Zuckerberg ended up on the cover of Time magazine is something, you know, they should be proud of. You know, they made that happen. And putting Zuckerberg on Saturday Night Live with Jesse Eisenberg, that was great. But
which was
I think
a great episode, by the way. It was one of the funniest I've seen in a while. I just watched it yesterday.
Yeah, it was really, really great. So I think that they're, that, you know, Social Network is I don't know what more they can do. I mean, they've sort of, I think they're trying to humanize it. I think they're trying to make it warmer and more, you know, more cuddly, more human. I think that is the right way to go.
Yeah, it's... what more they can do is an interesting way to put it, because I would actually say do less. I would stop talking about myself so much, because the campaign so far has been all about look at what we've won. Look how far we stand above the other contenders. You should vote for us. And they're late. I just wrote something about all the various messages going out there with the campaigns. And their new one is One Movie Connects Us All, which is a bit faux profound and not really... It's not a natural rhythm for that film to be taking, I feel. On the flip side, you've got something like King's Speech. Their new take is Find Your Voice, which is kind of brilliant because it speaks to the narrative of the movie, and it also speaks to the idea of don't let anyone tell you what to vote for. And these are really tough rhythms to find when it comes to an Oscar campaign, but if it were me, I would say pull back a little bit because the bludgeoning is not going to help.
I agree with you, actually. They did a masterful campaign to get as far as they did, and overdoing it isn't going to help.
Yeah. And then we were talking about Sundance briefly a moment ago, and I did want to answer this, so it's not all about this year's Oscar race. My question...
Oh, what emerged there for next year?
Yeah, what do you think are the new movies presented at the festival that could get nominated in the next Oscars? That's from Joe.
Well, I, of course, managed to miss the number one movie of Sundance, if you look at everybody's responses and what got picked up and what people are writing about, and that would be Like Crazy, which stars a young Brit named Felicity Jones, and the word is that she was the Carrie Mulligan of the festival. Of the films I saw, except for maybe a doc like Project Nim, which could certainly be a contender for a doc nomination. I would say none of the films I saw would be in the Oscar race.
Really? Because it was such a good year this year for last year's Sundance.
I know. I mean, last year I would have said immediately that Kids Are All Right and Winter's Bone would be contenders. I mean, I did. I mean, I was convinced of it, and they were. But I did not see Like Crazy, and that's the one that I would say is probably the one.
Okay. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. We've got the WGA Awards this weekend. We've got the Scripters tonight. Are you going to be there?
I will be there. It's one of my favorites because it's so civilized.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you there and talk to you next week.
Bye, Chris.
All right, bye.